Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, matching funds for publicly funded candidates edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 27, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Arizona Free Enterprise Club's Freedom Club PAC versus Bennett. The question in this case is whether Arizona's matching funds system for publicly funded candidates for state office violated the First Amendment. In an opinion delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that Arizona's matching fund scheme substantially burdens protected political speech without serving a compelling state interest and therefore violates the First Amendment. Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, and Alito joined the opinion of Chief Justice Roberts. Justice Kagan filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor. To discuss the case, we have Bradley A. Smith, who is the Josiah H. Blackmore II, and Shirley M. Nault, designated professor of law at Capital University Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Smith.
The Supreme Court's decision in Arizona Free Enterprise Club Freedom PAC, which we'll simply refer to by the respondent's name, Bennett, is another important step in the court's deregulatory trend toward campaign finance. To understand the case, we really have to go back a little bit and do a brief little bit of history, or else the circumstances in which the case comes to the court almost don't make sense. For a long time, the key goal of many elements of the campaign finance reform movement has been to have the government take over funding of political campaigns, a desire that actually goes all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt. And in 1976, the Supreme Court ruled, in, as part of its famous Buckley v. Valeo decision, that the government could not force candidates to take government financing and limit their spending to the amount that the government would give them, that they had to give candidates the opportunity to use private financing and to spend more than the amount the government would give. So from a legal standpoint, this immediately put supporters of government finance campaigns into something of a bind, in that they had to convince candidates to take the money and to get into the campaigns. At the same time, politically, such programs are not very popular. Basically, taxpayers don't want to spend money to subsidize political campaigns. So there's been a desire to run government campaigns on the cheap, that is, with minimizing the total cost to government, finding tax sources that are sort of unpopular that are but substantial enough to fund the program. For example, Arizona, the defendant state in the Bennett case, originally funded its government funding with a tax on lobbyists, a very unpopular group. But of course, it doesn't generate tons and tons of money, and so you've got to figure out, you know, how can you run the system with a relatively low expenditure. The result was something that became popular in the late 1990s with reform groups called clean elections, it was dubbed. And the idea here was that a candidate would raise a certain number of contributions, small contributions, and then would be given a, or even just signatures, and then would be given a chunk of money from the government in order to campaign. But the money was not terribly substantial. For example, in Arizona, for a state legislative race, it was in the $20-some thousand range. Thus, to convince candidates to take the money, that it would be worth it and that they wouldn't be outspent by an opponent who would not participate in the program, the states implemented what they called rescue funds, and were sometimes called matching funds. And what these did was that if you were a candidate who had agreed to participate in the program, if your opponent spent above the amount that you got from the government, then the government would just match your opponent's spending. They would just start giving you more money. Now, there was a cap on that eventually. It would vary from the different places. In Arizona, if I remember right, it was two times the amount. But in any case, essentially, if your opponent spending more, you would just get more money. Not only that, but they also would trigger this extra funds, these rescue funds or matching funds, if an independent spender came along and spent more money. So you would have a candidate who would have no control over an independent spender who might come in, run a message that arguably supported a particular candidate, but that candidate didn't really like. For example, the message might be one on gay marriage, which the candidate might want to downplay as an issue in the campaign. But nonetheless, the ad would be run, and not only would it be run, but it would then trigger, again, more funds for the candidate's opponent, state funds that could be raised, you know, automatically with no effort to raise the funds, and basically a dollar-for-dollar match. So that was the background of the rescue funds. Arizona Free Enterprise Club's Freedom PAC challenged this on the grounds that this penalized their speech, that if they wanted to speak out in favor of a candidate or opposed to a candidate, that would trigger money from the state to fund the opposing point of view. And that's what sets up the challenge in the Bennett case coming out of Arizona. Now, I want to start in looking at the opinion, actually, with the dissent by Justice Kagan on behalf of herself and the other three justices that generally are viewed as making up the court's more liberal wing. It's a 5-4 decision. Kagan essentially says, where is the issue in this case? Where is the issue at all? The government is simply funding more speech. So if a non-participating candidate speaks a lot, the government just adds more speech into the mix. No First Amendment violation there. She also, by the way, includes, in fact, begins her opinion with a lengthy counterfactual example, that is, a fictional example, in which she imagines a state that has a corruption problem, and they pass all these limits on campaign spending and so on, and contributions, and it doesn't work until they get government financing in. And then once the government finance campaigns, that seems to work, but only if they can get candidates into the system. It's an interesting counterfactual, because one almost reads it and says, you know, what is the point? Where is this going? But I'll come back to that in the way it shows a particular attitude toward the idea of private financing of campaigns. Now, the majority, I think, has a little bit more sophisticated or in-depth view about this question of, are we just getting more speech or less speech? The majority says, wait a minute. In campaigns, there are winners and losers. This is essentially a binary affair. And if every time candidate A speaks, the government automatically gives money to candidate B, it seems to suggest that the government really wants candidate B to win. It makes the speech of candidate A relatively useless, and the speech of his supporters, or at least it's an intentional effort to sort of work against them. Furthermore, they see this as an effort that's aimed at reducing the total amount of speech. The government, not so much in litigation, I think, because they saw this as a bad litigative strategy, but in passing the law and in its promotion of the law, even through the agency's own website, often said that its purpose was to level the playing field, which is one thing the Supreme Court has long said is none of the states or, you know, the government's business trying to level the playing field. That's what the First Amendment aims to prevent, is the government limiting some speech in order to enhance others. So it rejected that. But the other thing that the government said is that the purpose of the speech was, or of the matching funds, was to force candidates into the system, to get them into the public financing system. But what was the purpose of getting them into the public financing system? It was then to limit their amount of speech to the small subsidy that was granted by the government. Again, in Arizona, some $20,000 to $30,000 for a typical statewide race, depending on the exact race. So the majority says, first, this seems to be choosing sides in an election in a way that does penalize one speaker. And second, it seems to have the goal of forcing everybody to reduce their amount of speech by taking the government subsidy and not spending anything above that, and discouraging independent spenders, again, by informing them that their speech will simply be matched and therefore not be as effective as they would like. So that is ultimately the majority position. The opinion is written by the Chief Justice, and it carries the day. I think, though, what the ultimate divide is between the court, and it comes up here again in that first counterfactual that Justice Kagan raises in dissent, is fundamentally different views about how democracy works and how campaigns should be funded. The majority continues to view private speech as instrumental to a democracy, as fundamental, as indispensable, whereas the minority four justices tend to view private speech and campaigns as, at a minimum, rather shaky, something we might have to tolerate, but something that just is not really healthy for democracy, and that in its worst-case scenario can be quite a threat to a democracy, that it threatens to corrupt democracy and to lead to plutocracy and so on. And so this is the fundamental dividing line between the two parties. I do think that in the end, under the current doctrine of Buckley v. Valeo, which says that the government can fund campaigns, it may be tough for the majority to ultimately fend off Justice Kagan's position. For example, as she says, the state could just triple the amount of the grant up front, and that would seem to be okay under Buckley v. Valeo, as long as there weren't matching funds. And I think there is some truth to that. That's why I think eventually the majority is going to have to reconsider the rationale a bit, and I think that they will ultimately find that the real problem is Buckley's notion that the government can directly fund candidate campaigns, that inexorably leads to the government choosing sides, picking the types of candidates and the types of campaigns that they favor most. And I think that the court, at least if the current majority stays constituted as it is, will gradually move toward an idea of what we might call separation of campaign and state, a theme not used in those terms, but used initially by Chief Justice Berger dissenting in Buckley back 35 years ago. And I think if the court is serious about the idea that the government spending in directly funding political campaigns is a problem, that's really what they're going to find is the ultimate problem. So that's the lengthy case name, at least, of Arizona Free Enterprise Club, the Freedoms Club PAC versus Bennett. Again, it marks yet another step in the Supreme Court's gradual move toward deregulating campaign finance.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.